Welcome to Wisco Dice!
This is episode 140 of the Wisco Dice Tabletop Gaming Podcast! Today is May 28th, 2025, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking with Josh from Lone Colossus Games and rolling into a ton of Dungeons & Dragons and RPG fun. But before we get into that interview, I do want to note that this interview was originally recorded in late March. Now, it's been a crazy spring here for us here at Wisco Dice, so we apologize for delay, but we wanted to make sure that you got a chance to hear what all the cool things that are going on at Lone Colossus Games are and get some extra RPG content out there for those of you who really enjoy it. So with that, let's roll into that interview with Suzanne and I and Josh from Lone Colossus Games. Hey, all right. So we're joined by Josh from Lone Colossus Games. How's it going, Josh?
Good. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here. So I hear you into this role-playing game thing.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit to the point that you've started a company focusing on RPGs, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this company that you have and why you started it.
Yeah. So Lone Colossus Games is just me. I'm the sole person behind the company, although that kind of maybe obfuscates the fact that I work with a lot of freelancers. So it's not, you know, just me making my products, but it is just me, you know, kind of coming up with the original ideas for the products and, you know, kind of running everything behind the scenes and managing all the different moving pieces. But yeah, the overall goal that I have with Lone Colossus Games is just to publish my own works. It's the way that I do my self-publishing. Kind of the focus is, you know, inspiration for, you know, creative role-playing, better storytelling, and just making new systems that I want to see in the world.
Very cool. And so why RPGs?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing role-playing games for a long time. I think technically, like, second edition might have been my first role-playing game. Back in elementary school, I was in a D&D club, although I was only able to join it for like one session or something because it was at the same time as music, and so I couldn't stick around. Fun fact, one of my undergrad degrees is in music performance, so that was a big part of my life for a long time. But yeah, I've been playing role-playing games for a long time. Got into probably more into role-playing games in like RPGs and video games to start with, and then slowly got my way into D&D during sort of middle and high school. And then from there, all sorts of other games. So, you know, early on, I was already playing like Shadowrun and Fate and, you know, other systems. I wasn't kind of locked into D&D or anything. But D&D has been a system that I've always kind of come back to. Role-playing games have just been a big part of kind of my social life, I guess. You know, it's one of the main social activities that I did growing up and that I've continued to do. Yeah, it's just, I have a lot of ideas for RPGs, and so that's sort of been the focus so far with Lone Colossus Games, is making D&D books and also new systems.
Yeah, I noticed that everything that you're doing right now is all Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition compatible, right?
Just about, yeah. So I have two 5e books that are out, and of course, pretty much all the stuff that I have on Drive-Thru. So I've released a couple of classes, subclasses, you know, a bunch of monsters and things that I did early on when I first started the company, and those are all 5e compatible. But I've also made a couple of new role-playing game systems. So Wyrmlings is one of those. It's an all-ages game, kind of inspired by shows like you know, My Little Pony and Steven Universe. So very, you know, friendly, all ages, like super, like, you know, Saturday morning cartoon vibes in that game. Very different from actually what my first 5e book was, which was Injuries and Vile Deeds, which is a dark fantasy supplement for 5e. So right now, like, you know, when you see me at conventions, you have kind of two very different things at the table. One is this very happy, like, you know, cartoon thing, and the other is dark fantasy. But yeah, for the most part, my focus has been on 5e releases. And part of that is because I've been playing 5e since it first came. In fact, I was part of the playtesting for the first edition of 5e. first release of 5e in 2014. And so I was kind of designing my own monsters from the get-go as soon as the books were published. So I actually only more recently got into actually using monsters from the Monster Manual because I was so comfortable with designing them myself, you know, using the guidelines in Dungeon Master's Guide and just sort of building out that encounter balance. I liked sort of exploring other systems and finding what I liked in them and bringing them back into D&D. Cause I would, like I said earlier, I would kind of always come back to D&D. It's this system that I've sort of gravitated to a lot throughout my last, you know, 15 years or plus of playing RPGs more consistently, not including the couple of sessions back in elementary school. So yeah, that's kind of why RPGs.
That's pretty awesome. Talked a little bit about your company. We've talked a little bit about why D&D specifically, but when you're creating these things, whether it's monsters or modules, where do you take your inspiration from?
Yeah, so it a lot of different places. So with Injuries and Invalideeds, the injury systems, kind of I took inspiration initially from the Fantasy Flight Star Wars games, so Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion. They have this really great injury system in them, and after running a campaign in that for a couple of years and coming back to D&D, I was like, you know, D&D is really missing this, you know, aspect of it, and I like running dark fantasy games, and so like the heroic fantasy elements of 5e, you know, at its core weren't super working well for me and my group. And so bringing in those injury systems initially just started with what I had from, you know, just ported over basically from Edge of the Empire and then sort of adapted it into my own thing and something that fit better with 5e and what I wanted to see with it. Injuries and Invalideeds, the book in, as a whole with dark fantasy, I took a lot of inspiration from my nightmares. There's several creatures in there that are straight out of my dreams, although they were not pleasant dreams necessarily. Wyrmlings, as an inspiration, basically just came from, I was running a lot of dark fantasy stuff and the group needed a break from that for just a session. And I ran a one shot that was just like, what is the total opposite of this that I could do? And it was like, okay, we're going to run like a happy, you know, Saturday morning cartoon type thing. And one morning at work, I just had this like, sort of first three lines of a theme song pop into my head basically. And I was like, okay, it's going to be Wyrmlings and we're going to go, you know, have, you know, Wyrmling Brigade adventures for the session. So it really comes from everywhere. Yeah. Some monsters are literally just like, oh, hey, did you know this animal can do this thing? That's really cool. That's kind of terrifying. What if that animal was huge? Right. Like, you know,
see, it's like, when you said that, first thing that popped in my head is an ant, right? That can like carry so much. And so now I'm like picturing this giant ant made out of stones that can like throw boulders at us. So
yeah, for sure.
But anyway, yeah, I'm going off on a tangent, I guess. Sorry. Yeah.
No, so it's okay.
So injuries and maldeeds that you have, like what, describe for the listeners what that book brings to the role-playing table experience for both players and DMs.
Yeah, so Injuries and Vile Deeds, the main thing, the where it started was the injury systems, right? And so the main thing that I wanted to achieve with that was making combat more tactical, more cinematic, and more threatening. And, you know, a lot of times in 5e, especially once you get to level 5 or so, there's a lot of just bouncing up and down from 0 with Healing Word. You know, you have a lot of access to healing magic. And so, you know, you get into these fights and it's great for heroic fantasy because you're never really at risk of someone dying or, you know, really getting hurt. You know, you come out of a fight, you take a short rest, and you are totally fine. Unless someone actually dies, there's really no consequence to fighting things ever. And so for me, running dark fantasy games, I really wanted to see, you know, these, you know, individual fights sort of take their toll on the party. And even if you survive, you know, I don't want my players to be at risk of dying randomly in a swamp to some alligators, right? Like, it's great if you want to have that kind of game, but my players are attached to their characters and I do want to have serious consequences for them. But at the same time, I want character death to be like, you know, important. I want it to happen at a narratively appropriate moment. And I want them to sort of choose when that's going to happen. And so the injury systems, you know, on their side of things, on the player side of things, you know, sort of give players that control. It's like, okay, well, maybe you got a twisted ankle in this fight. That's not so bad. You know, that mechanical effect of that will be gone shortly, but that injury is going to linger. That slot is filled. you know, on your character sheet. And so the next time you get hurt, it's going to be worse. And so if you as a player go, well, I've got a couple of injuries, but I'm going to keep pushing on. We're not going to take a couple of days to rest these off. You are going to end up in serious trouble, but that's going to be your choice, right? It's not totally randomized. And then on the other side of things, players can also hurt monsters. So it's not just, oh, you know, your players are going to get injured now. You also, it gives you essentially, you know, a version of like a called shot system. So if you wanted to attack like a dragon's wings to bring it down to the ground, or, you know, go for its breath weapon, stop it from breathing fire on the party, it gives you those options. And especially for martial characters who right now, like, you know, you attack maybe twice and that's your entire turn, and you don't have a lot of options to control the battlefield outside of, you know, okay, well, I get a free attack on them if they leave my 5-foot, you know, radius, right? But like beyond that, you can't really do any sort of control. And so giving martial characters, especially, those extra options to use in combat is really, it really improves the game, and it really gives a lot more, you know, tactical options, and it tells some great stories. Like, you know, I mentioned attacking a dragon's wing. That is a thing that happened in my game. I was running Red Hand of Doom, and they got the fighter on top of the dragon as it was flying, took out its wings for a round, and it, you know, fell to the ground and we skidded through a building, right? Like it was a really epic moment for that story. And that's not something that you could normally just do with, you know, rules as written. So
yeah, no, certainly. I mean, as a GM, you only really have a couple of tools in the 5e core system to really control or try to push a party past, you know, hey, do we take a short rest, long rest? Do we just long rest? And that biggest tool is time. So now it sounds like with the injury system, you're layering on, well, resting for longer durations might be more important, but now you also have to risk the evolving things in the game world that you're traditionally had as a tool to kind of emphasize things. But when there's not a go rescue the MacGuffin or something like that, or some other dire thing, like, oh, well, what's a couple of days in the game world? Well, it's just whatever. We'll just sit here for a night and then go.
Right. Yeah, and even with that too, like, you know, I absolutely think that everyone should always have timelines in their games for what will happen if the players do nothing, right? So like you said, like, we need to go rescue the MacGuffin, right? You have 3 weeks to do that, and you know that you have 3 weeks to do that. If you are hurt and you have to rest for 4 days, you better find some other stuff that's going to keep your quest moving forward that maybe isn't fighting, you know? Mm-hmm. It changes your perspective on how combat works. And how desirable it is to enter a fight. And especially, I think, if you're not taking part in the, like 8 fights a day or 6 fights a day or whatever that, you know, yeah, 2014 5e told people that they should expect. And no one plays that way, basically. I don't mind it myself that, like, you know, my players get to go Nova every other fight. But it also means that there's going to be, you know, heavier consequences to fighting, and they have to think about, like, okay, what are some things we could do ahead of a fight to make that fight easier for us, or what can we do to avoid fighting things, you know, when it's not, when we don't have to. But when that time, you know, sort of ticks down and you're close to the end, that's where you have to make a decision as a player of, like, okay, we're hurt, but we literally can't afford to rest off our injuries, and maybe, you know, you can make medicine checks to remove them, and there are some consequences doing that as well. But depending on if you've done that already, you know, you may or may not be able to clear up your injuries. And so it creates this really interesting story of, like, okay, our frontline fighter is actually pretty hurt. And so going into this fight, do we try and keep them safe, or are they just going to risk their life? And we know that they might die because they're already hurt. And so it creates this really interesting dynamic there as well.
So I like the idea of having things making like medicine checks more useful, right? I mean, I think that's something that is a little underserved. I've been trying to find ways to get the players to use like that ability more in my games, but it makes a lot of sense. Like, oh, hey, I got to say, like, your twisted ankle example. While somebody makes a successful medicine check on somebody, maybe that's wrapping up the ankle enough so that they can hobble around, and maybe they're not impacted as much by their movement now, but it'll take more time for it to ultimately heal.
Exactly.
That sounds like a really cool idea.
Yeah. Well, and I'm very intrigued by this, like, it's giving the players an incentive to do something other than fight. Mm-hmm. Or just do the, hey, this is our easy button path. Like, in this adventure, we are supposed to go to X, you know, to X and then to Y to Z. But they're like, it's almost forcing them to do these other, you know, mini side, not even side quests. Just, what else are we going to do? How else can we get towards the end objective?
I can say my players groan quite a bit at the table because I make them go through about 15 to 20 encounters a day before they get a long rest. Talk about grumble, grumble.
Not from me.
That's a lot of encounters.
It is. But they, you know, they have options to not necessarily have to do combat every time. So
yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. They're not necessarily all combat encounters. Yeah.
But it certainly makes players choose more carefully how many, which spells they're going to be using. They're much more aware too of like, so what time of the day is it? I get that question quite a bit now because of the number of encounters, but this is definitely an awesome, I think, way to also leverage time with injuries to make it work uniquely. So that's the injury system. That sounds really cool. What about the vile deeds part of it? What's unique there? That has my interest piqued.
Yeah, so the injuries are basically like the first chapter in the book. And then there's a whole bunch of dark fantasy options. So there's new subclasses, there's one subclass for each class. And then there are, you know, a bunch more feats and backgrounds for villains or ex-villains, depending on, you know, how you want to play your character. So like you could be a cultist or maybe an ex-cultist, or like an enforcer, or I think there's like a barrister option where it's like, well, maybe you're like a lawyer, but you work for the companies or the local government that, you know, is tyrannical or whatever, right? Like, you know, what are you enforcing or what are you maybe working to work against, right? Like, you know, trying to tear down the local, you know, tyrannical regime or whatever, but you're doing it from the inside out or something. There are new spells and magic items and a bunch of monsters and NPCs as well. So it's a lot of dark fantasy stuff, and almost everything in the book sort of interacts with the injury system. So, you know, you might find certain classes might give you special ways to inflict injuries, or, you know, you might get a magic item that makes it easier to injure, your monsters, or maybe that makes it harder to injure you, or, you know, there are spells that let you ignore injuries for a short time, that sort of thing. But there's also spells that just inflict injuries, right? So lots of villainous, character options in there.
Sounds cool.
A barrister, like that's like, I mean that sounds pretty cool to have that as a. Oh.
Well, you're coming this as from the perspective of the player, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah, I like having more options to kind of mix and match pieces and have different backstories then too.
Yep. So besides this product right now, it sounds like you have a bunch of other stuff that's out and available currently. What else do you have out there, and how do folks get their hands on it?
Yeah, so you can find everything that I do through my website, loneclossesgames.com, and I have a web store, which is just shop.loneclossesgames.com. So all of my physical products are available on my web store. You can also find my stuff on DriveThruRPG. But yeah, I have another 5e book that's coming out very soon. It is probably finishing up print in the next few weeks. And yeah, that's called Tome of Intangible Treasures. So that is focused on intangible adventure rewards. So basically anything that's not a magic item or gold, right? So boons, charms, pacts, you know, special trainings. It could be, there are histories. So it's kind of like backgrounds, but for like level 5, level 11, so on. So it's sort of representing like how have your adventures changed you. So if you went to the Plane of Fire, maybe you're better at like traveling through a, you know, hot environment now, right? Or that could also be true for the desert. So you could take that, like I think it called it Firewalker as the history for that. And it would make sense for both of those settings. Or you could, maybe you were betrayed by a close NPC ally, a very, you know, a favorite of GMs everywhere. You might take the like betrayed history, and that sort of represents like how you as a character have changed based on the adventures that you've had. And then there are titles, and that represents how the world changes as a result of your, or how their perception of you changes as a result of your adventures. So if you save a town, then you might be the savior of that town or the hero of that town or whatever, right? And so you're going to get bonuses on like charisma checks and things that relate to people who care about that town. And that maybe that's, if it's a small town, maybe the king of the country doesn't actually care that you save this little town. It's like, oh yeah, whatever. You know, we have guards that can do that too. But the people who live there really care. But maybe if you save the capital and you're, or like you're the savior of the country, everyone in the country, you know, is happy with that. Maybe their enemies aren't, right? But, you know, so it sort of gives you tools to work with for a lot of different scenarios that are, or, you know, like if you are granted a blessing by a spirit for, you know, cleansing its shrine or whatever, right? Like it could be a magic item. But it doesn't have to be a magic item. And so if it's not a magic item, what does that look like? Well, it's a boon, or it's a charm, or maybe they offer you a pact, right? It's like, what is, you know, you made a deal with an archfey, but you're not a warlock. What does that look like? Stuff like that.
You mean we don't just want to give the players more gold coins? that then they, I mean, at some point in 5e, it seems like gold becomes pointless anymore, right?
If it's, yeah,
they don't, they, yeah, players just even the wizard, who's I feel like the most expensive class to play,
is, really,
yeah, because every time you get a spell, like heaven forbid a wizard actually cast a spell from a scroll that they don't already have in their spell book, they will pinch and save their money and never cast that spell on that spell from a scroll until they've scribed it, except for maybe Suzanne.
Yeah, my money, my wizard's money just comes and goes. It's no big deal.
But yeah,
no, got lots of treasure in my haversack.
That's a very common thing though, is for player character wizards. Like they're expensive. Is it what 50 gold a spell level or 100 gold a spell level to transcribe it?
Yeah.
To so that gets expensive in a hurry if you're picking up spells.
Wow. So. Oh. I do have a question. I think that a lot of our listeners from the beginning are probably going, hey, we need to know more about this. You have a degree in music.
Yeah.
Has it been beneficial to you as you have left the schooling? For all those music majors out there, give them something to say to their parents. Look, it can be helpful. I can be successful.
I used it to create D&D products.
It has been helpful, but not necessarily because it's music. It's because it was performance. Sure. So I got very used to, I still don't like public speaking, but I got very used to sort of, no matter how nervous I was leading up to a performance, as soon as I started playing, that sort of left until I made a mistake. So, you know, it definitely helped me with just being able to do interviews and, like, you know, whether for jobs or for this or for anything else, being able to just sort of talk. And then also, like, this is more specific to music or just arts in general. So every week you do, you know, you get like a chance to critique other students in your class and to get critique from them. And so sort of learning how to provide feedback on things and how to accept feedback and learn how to teach yourself in some ways as well. I think those are all things that I probably learned from my music degree, or at least got better at from doing music. I also have a degree in neuroscience in undergrad, and then I have a PhD in biomedical engineering. So,
well, those are going to get you, like, those are like instant job ticket type of things. But I am glad, because those were like the performance, like, and how to handle criticism. That's a big deal. So
it is. No, it's a really big deal. There's a definitely that's a challenge, especially in the content creation world that we live in, to get over that hump. And then when you're doing interviews, you can definitely tell people who are more nervous while we're doing the interview and who aren't. So that's awesome. So
thanks for humoring me with that, you know, sidetracked piece.
I will say, like, that is also when it comes to, like, Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games as well. I think music is a very important part of the world. And certainly if you think about characters who are in a world without television or radio or any of the modern entertainments, traveling musicians and minstrels and things like that. Yeah, there's a bard class and whatnot, but I don't think they do it nearly enough justice. And to be honest, I don't know that I've seen a lot of really good products out there that dive into that side of things. So that'd be, I mean, for me, I'm not trying to say, hey, do this, but I'm saying for me, that is definitely something that I would love to see explored in a product in more detail somewhere down the roads from someone. So yeah, I always wanted to pretend being a musician and never really was.
Right. Yep. So we've got this dark fantasy, and then you've got your light wormlings to contrast. And I will say, when we saw your booth at Midwinter, that was kind of the part that attracted me to your booth, like drew my attention, because so often you see our RPGs, D&D, with that dark motif, but then hearing about all this other stuff was like, got me really interested in what you had, your, you know, injuries and vile deeds and all that other stuff. But I had a good question about wormlings, and now I've gone off on a tangent.
Well, I mean, it's nice to see.
He gave me coffee this morning, so I'm still really hyped.
No, you got your own coffee. I didn't give it to you. You went and bought it.
I'm still really wired.
No, it's really good to have more entry level gateway products on the table that aren't. And I don't, you know, I haven't played Wormling, so I don't know how gateway as far as complexity and rules is, but it's one of those products that is very similar to, like, say, when we talk about collectible card games, Pokemon or Disney Lorcana being as kind of a gateway into that style of gaming before people transition maybe to more hardcore games like, say, Magic the Gathering. Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games need those types of games and that kind of content. So, I mean, is Wormlings that kind of a game as well?
Yeah, Wormlings is absolutely designed. So designed for everyone. It is designed for newcomers, but it also has enough complexity to it that if you have already played RPGs, you're not going to get tired of playing it. So it has character advancement rules in it, for example. But you can start with just the basic rules, and that is just the 2d6 dice pool, you know, comparing your dice against target number. It actually comes with a bunch of adventures in it, so it's kind of designed for busy game masters. It's very improv oriented. So it helps get people into role playing and sort of learning non-combat or non-violent problem solving, and also just being able to, like, talk your way through role playing, right? And not necessarily relying on a super heavy structure like D&D has to get through those situations. Because I think a lot of the time for us, like, at least for me, when I got into role playing, I was really, you know, awkward about it, and like I didn't want to, like, act, right? Which role playing doesn't, it's not just acting, it's making decisions in character, and that doesn't have to be acting. A lot of it is just being able to talk as your character and sort of knowing how your character thinks when you're talking. And so I think just sort of having a more, like, you know, conversational style game to get people into role-playing games definitely helps with that. But it has a pair of tutorial adventures that actually start the book. So even if you haven't played RPGs before at all, it walks you through, the reader through, how to run a game of Wormlings. And, you know, I think everyone pretty much grew up playing make-believe. So at some point you have run a role-playing game before, you have played it before. And so, like, you know, just having that little extra guide of being like, hey, this is how you do this. When your players want to do this thing, think about, you know, what kind of role maybe you'd ask for, and then, you know, set a difficulty. Is this an easy thing to do? Is this a hard thing to do? That gives you your number, and you, you know, move on from there.
So I did think of my question. You reminded me of my question about where. So you said it does have character advancement. How many levels does it go up to? I'm assuming it's like not a full 20.
Sure. So yeah. So it's a levelless system.
Okay.
So you after every session or after every adventure, because an adventure takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on your players. But you could, you know, if you wanted to play a 4-hour session, you just string together two adventures basically. But essentially every session, or every adventure, you get one advancement box. Maybe your GM decides that you haven't finished enough of the adventure in a session, so you're not going to hand out, you know, a box in this one, or maybe you're going to hand out multiples, however you want to do it. But there are boxes and you check them off, and some of the boxes have a dragon symbol in them and some of them have a heart symbol in them. When you check off a dragon symbol, you get a dragon talent. So that is a new ability for your character to have. You can have up to three of them. And then after that point, you get to either upgrade ones that you already have, or if you have advanced to a different year of dragon school. So this is sort of set in the town of Dragonsdale. General concept is you are, you know, young dragons and you're going to dragon school to learn what being a dragon means, how to use your special powers and develop your, you know, your abilities and things. And so depending on the year that you are in dragon school, you get access to more powerful talents. So there's 3 years of school sort of framed as like maybe three like seasons of a TV show, right? Where each adventure is its own episode. And of course, an adventure, because it's kind of cartoon logic, could be like, well, our friend's birthday is tomorrow. We need to figure out the best present to get for them. Or, you know, our friend has been kidnapped by an evil wizard and we have to go rescue them, right? It could be anything that you would fit in your standard cartoon. When you uncover or when you cover up a heart symbol, you get a friendship talent. So friendship talents are a group thing. So you have a group character sheet as well for your Wyrmling Brigade. And as you unlock these friendship talents, you are basically representing how the group is growing together, how you learn to work together better. You know, what is your style of teamwork? What does your style of friendship look like? And how does that, you know, play out in your sessions?
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, no, that's good. It sounds like a really, really cool, neat little system, a great way to, I think, make it very approachable for generational players, right? For families and that kind of thing. So that's very neat.
Yeah.
Getting a little bit away from those, one of the things we do like to mention when we're talking with designers and publishers is, you know, get a little bit away from the products that they're making, and let's, you know, try to find out a little bit more about them as gamers. When you're playing role-playing games, do you find yourself tending to be more in the GM judge's seat, or are you more of a just enjoying life as a player and letting somebody else run the games? Are you a forever DM like me?
I am absolutely a forever DM, and I like it. I enjoy playing. I actually right now I run a one game and I play one game, and that's the game that I play in is a game that the game master is just really good, and I will play in any game that they want to run. I don't really care what the system is, although right now we're playing 3.5 and it doesn't super suit our group just because we are a very role-playing oriented group. We actually don't get into combat very often, and our characters are extremely optimized for combat. So when we get into a fight, we just nuke everything and then we're done. It's not really usually a challenge, although we'll see the final boss is the God of Fear. So that might be a bit more of a challenge, depending on if our ability to convince the universe that he's actually the God of Hope pans out, in which case I'm not sure what that's going to look like. So you can see kind of like how that group plays. But yeah, no, otherwise I like running games. Part of it, I think, is that I do a lot of game design. And so, you know, I just like making things, and having a group to just make things for is a lot of fun. And I like world building a lot. And so I need people to play in the worlds that I build.
That's cool.
That is cool. And when you're playing, are you playing mostly online or in-person games? Or
Yeah, I prefer in person. The game that I'm running right now is an in-person group. I've been fortunate to have that group for a long time. Actually, the game that I'm playing in has been going for a very long time. I think that I joined that campaign maybe 8 years ago, and I think they've been running for like 10 or something like that. It's a long, long game. That game started before, so more than 10 years, I guess. It started before 5e came out. So, yeah.
I'm going to say that's impressive. I've got like 2.5 years in a single game under my belt. We at least met every month. Didn't miss a month. So there was that. But yeah, that is, I hear of these fabled campaigns that are like 8, 10 plus years. And I keep daydreaming that I'd want to be a part of something like that or run something like that. And I don't know. It just never seems to work out that way.
Yeah. We, part of the reason why it lasts or it's taken so long is that, you know, we've had a couple of like short hiatuses in there. We have like, we try to meet weekly, but realistically it's like once or twice a month, with how often, you know, we end up canceling things. My preference is weekly because, I keep track of things from week to week, but, when it gets more spread out, then it's like, what did we do last session? That was like 4 weeks ago. That was like, that feels like a year ago. Like, I don't remember anymore. And especially when you have like the time dilation between in-game and out-of-game, right? It's like, oh, well, I think like 6 years ago we had 30 days left until the end of the campaign. We're finally on 1 day left. Like, a lot of real-world time passing and not a lot of in-game time.
Sure.
Yeah. Wow, but yeah. That's commitment to every week to be doing that.
Yeah, no, and that's...
For 8 years, wow.
That's
all on the same campaign.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, no,
that
I run 2 D&D 5e games, and then I GM at various conventions and whatnot. And yeah, it's like that's a challenge. And I wish I had more time in my adult life, but there's for more D&D and more RPGs. But
yeah.
Then we have board games and miniature games and all those other things that want to eat up my time.
You know, just can't adulting, have a real job.
Adulting is hard.
Yeah.
But
all right. Well, I think that probably gets us through.
Got through my list of questions.
Yeah, gets us through all of our questions. Now, one more time before we wrap things up, of course, I do want to point out to folks, we're going to have all of the links to everything we've talked about for all of Josh's products, for everything on the blog article that will go along with this episode. So if you want to just head over to wiscodice.com, you'll find details to all of this. But Josh, if you could just remind folks one more time where they can go get any of the wonderful products that we just talked about today. Make sure that our audience knows where to get them and where to find out more. And if you're on social media, maybe you want to give them those links as well.
Yeah. So you can find everything that I do at LoneColossusGames.com. And yeah, everything's linked there. So my web store, shop.LoneColossusGames.com, is linked there. You can sign up for my newsletter. I'm on Threads and Facebook and Instagram with just at Lone Colossus Games, and then also on Blue Sky, which is really more where I interact with things. I also should mention, I guess I have another crowdfunding campaign coming up, launching probably about a week from when we're recording this. So that is a follow-up to Tome of Intangible Treasures, adding more boons and charms, but coming at it from the monster hunting aspect of things. So being able to steal your enemy's powers, basically using harvested components and conducting rituals with those.
That sounds cool.
And that's going to be on, you said Kickstarter?
It'll be on BackerKit.
BackerKit. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I put the right, have them go to the right place.
There are enough of these crowdfunding platforms out there. It's hard to keep track of sometimes which ones are which. But yep, BackerKit's, we've backed a number of projects on BackerKit already before, not just used them to fill out crowdfunding surveys. All right. Well, Josh, this has been awesome. I'm looking forward very much to seeing where you go and where Lone Colossus Games goes.
Yeah.
Best of luck in all of your endeavors. And like I said, I think that you got some really awesome things that are going to really help some GMs out there explore and expand their games at their tabletops and make make those games a bit more immersive and a bit, just take some of that easy button maybe off of 5e.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again. And we look forward to also seeing you all play at some conventions around here.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you leave a review of this show wherever your favorite place is to find podcasts. Oh, and by the way, give us a like on our Facebook page. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest while you're at it. If you haven't looked recently, make sure you catch up on the blog at wiscodice.com. Hey, Brian, what's that site?
Ah, darn, I forget. Justin, what's our website again?
Wiscodice.com.
That's right, it's wiscodice.com. And until next time, everyone, peace out.